Welcome to another episode of Storyteller Studio, where we're keeping the art of conversation alive through genuine curiosity. And we're eager to share it with folks around the world. As a radio announcer, Tim believes there's something unique about sitting behind a microphone and just allowing the stories to flow. Often people simply need a reason to enjoy each other. And we have found plenty of others who feel the same way. Tim and his guest may have known each other for 30 years or for 3 minutes. From historians, musicians, artists, and manufacturers to filmmakers, authors, and media types. We all may know bits and pieces about a person, but there's always something more. So while we grab our headphones and turn up the mics, it's your chance to eavesdrop on yet another episode of Storyteller Studio.
This episode needs so much more backstory than I can give you now, but here goes. I went to the last frontier in September of 2021 with Alaskan Tour Guides Company after being delayed by the pandemic. I did not want to have my face in a map for the entire week of a place that I had really no clue about. I hate the organizational part of traveling, especially when you don't know what you're doing. I just wanted somebody to say, show up tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, dress this way, and here's where we're going. And that's exactly what happened. Well, our guide, Rachel Daniels, spent her first 4 winters in Alaska, so boy, did she have the stories for us. There was no running water. She had wood stove heat only. No flush toilets. They used chamber pots and outhouses. It was 50 below zero on most days, and the cabin was not insulated. They lived off the land. She moved from Nashville, Tennessee, believe it or not. And when I asked why on earth would you do that? She says, I was drawn to Alaska. She couldn't explain it any more than that. As she took me on a 10-day spin around the state with 13 other strangers, we saw the extremes of Alaska, from Denali National Park to the tiny town of Hope, the uniqueness of Anchorage, and an Iditarod dog sled training camp. We saw folks filleting salmon on the docks of Seward. Then we hiked up a glacier and then casually built some really fat s'mores outside a 5-star hotel. Rachel continuously provided homegrown storytelling entertainment as we traveled. Let me warn you ahead of time that this audio was only recorded on my phone from overhead speakers in our shuttle bus. Her microphone was minimal and attached to a small headset, so you know where we're starting from. I remembered having this audio file when my son told me a story a couple of days ago involving a moose. And I thought more than 14 people should hear this story from Rachel Daniel. Enjoy.
So we get to the landing and the boat launch, and one of our jet skis won't fire over. So now we're down to one jet ski. We got one jet ski. We have Bill, me, my son Canyon, who's like 6 or 7 at the time, and my best friend is up here to join us. So there's 3 adults and a kid, 1 jet ski. So we do some shuttling, and we didn't have really high expectations of getting a moose. It was kind of more, you know, we wanted her to join in on a hunt, and if we did get one, then we would make a plan, which was our first mistake. We didn't have a plan that we were gonna work. So this particular hunt, I have participated at this point in plenty of hunts, but I have never been point man. I've never actually pulled the trigger on a big game animal. I've shot a lot of squirrels and birds and rabbits, but I have never killed a big game animal. So we decide to break it up. Bill is going to drop Canyon and me off on the edge of one swamp, and then he's going to take the four-wheeler and Desiree, and they're going to go several miles to another swamp in order to kind of like spread out and up our chances. So he drives us to the end of this little survey trail, and Canyon and I climb off of the rig, and we go out and we select this little spot kind of out in the swamp, and we've got kind of a big bush for cover and then a little bitty scrubby bush, but other than that there are no trees. There's really nothing around us. We're kind of out in the middle of this swamp with a 360-degree view. So we wait for everything to get quiet and the noise and the disruption of the four-wheeler to fade away. Give it 20 or 30 minutes or so. and I let out a cow call. So the idea for moose hunting is you want to call these animals to you. So I let out a cow call, wait 10 minutes or so, don't hear much of anything. And then I let out a couple of bull moose. It's like kind of a grunt noise that they make. And here, 5 minutes goes by and boom, a cow and a calf pop out of the tree line about 100 yards from us. And that's a good sign. It means that my cow call is effective. So she starts kind of making, she's not coming at a fast pace, but she's coming directly towards us. And she's walking with purpose. And so about 40 yards out, I start to get a little concerned. I'm looking around. I'm like, okay, if she keeps coming this way, what's my plan? And I don't want to stand up and blow my cover, because if I spook her, one of two things is going to happen. She's either going to charge because she has a baby calf with her, or she's going to run off into the woods and she's going to blow my cover, and every cow in a 5 mile radius is going to know that I'm there hunting in that swamp. So I'm sitting there and I'm deliberating, and she's getting closer and closer, and I look, and now I'm kind of in a pickle, because if I pop up out of the woods, she's more than likely going to charge and try to trample me. And I have my baby with me. So he's no more than six, or I think he's six at this year. I think this is the year after kindergarten. So she's closing in at 10 yards, and about 5 yards out, I'm sweating really tight. My options at this point are, I definitely don't want to stand up. I don't want her to know that I'm there. So I have this idea, maybe I can find a way to make an unnatural noise, and that'll alert her that something's off. So what I decided to do, I decided to click the safety on my rifle, and that metal on metal noise is something that you wouldn't hear out in nature, and that's exactly what did it. She looked right at the spot where I was sitting, squatted down, and she turns around. And she starts trotting off at a really quick clip. Well, this little baby doesn't quite understand what's going on. He doesn't realize that something's amiss here. And so he just kind of stands there stupidly staring around like, what happened? And I see mom, she gets about 30 yards around, and she turns to look for baby, and he's not there. And I swear I heard like mom moose voice. She was like, you get over here now. And that baby turns on a dime, and he takes off and gets alongside mama, and they run off into the trees. And I figure, okay, well, that's it. You know, she's spooked. She's let out a cow call to baby, you know, to get out of there. Everybody knows we're here. So we can just relax, and we'll just wait for Bill to come pick us up. Hunt's more than likely over. So another, I don't know, 15 or 20 minutes goes by, and I decide it's quiet enough again. I'll let out another call. And so this time I let out a bull call, and I'm scanning the tree line, and 10 or so minutes goes by, and I look off to about 9 o'clock, and then I rescan, boom, right on the tree line, this bull moose appears. And guys, it was instantaneous, the adrenaline that started thumping through my body. My heart, as soon as I see this bull moose, starts hammering in my chest in a way that it did not with the cow. Even though I knew we were in a dangerous situation, I was still very calm and cool. But now, 40 yards from me is this bull moose that is fully in the rut, and I am worked up. A bull moose is a male, and he's got the antlers, the big antlers. And so there's rules about what is a legal bull moose to shoot and what is illegal, and you have to know what those rules are, because the consequences of shooting an illegal bull moose are dire. And so in our particular game management unit, a bull moose has to be one of a couple of things. It either has to have a 50 inch spread from tip to tip on the antlers, and you better be sure, 49 7/8 is illegal. And if you get caught with an illegal harvest, you're getting a $10,000 fine. They're gonna confiscate your boat, your truck, your rifle. They might put you in jail. You're gonna lose your hunting license for 10 years. They're very, very serious about conservation up here. So I'm looking at this bull moose, and I'm afraid to make the wrong call. I'm looking, and I can't tell how many brown tines he has. I don't know. And so I remember thinking, okay, like, I'm not qualified to make this call, so I need you to just go back in the tree line. So, and I'll just be like, oh, yeah, we saw one. I couldn't tell if it was legal, but, you know, he got away. So, you know, sorry. And instead, I lock eyes on this antler rack, and there is very clearly 1, 2, 3 brow tines, plain as the nose on my face. And so a brow tine, so that there's the big paddle, right? And in the front of the paddle, there's like it's almost like a sub paddle, and those are called tines, and brow tines are the ones on the front, and they're separated kind of like a big dip in the antler. So the brow tines are the ones you're counting. So this guy has 3. And so now I know this is a legal bull. So I remember thinking, like, you know, shoo, like, get out of here. Run for your life. And so I remember vividly there was this voice in my head that said, you know, you don't have an excuse here. Your family needs to eat. You need to put meat in the freezer for winter. So no matter what kind of fear you've got going on, you need to pull it together and you need to feed your family. So I pull out my scope and I get this moose in my crosshairs. And I don't have a really great shot. He's kind of facing me face on, and I don't want to take a chest shot. And then at that moment, this moose turns broadside like a barn at 40 yards. And it's an impossibly easy shot. There's no reason in the world to miss this shot. So my heart is hammering. I can hardly breathe. My vision is like blurry. And I get him in the crosshairs. I take a deep breath and I slowly exhale and I squeeze the trigger. Boom. He doesn't move. Nothing. And I think, oh my God, I just missed a moose at 40 yards. Like, how am I ever going to explain this to Bill? So my hands are shaking. I have adrenaline. They call it buck fever. And even some of the most experienced big game hunters in the world, they get this overwhelming adrenaline when they hunt an animal like this. And I was no exception. So my hands are shaking and I have a little bolt action 270, and I'm trying to get myself calmed down enough to get a new bullet chambered. So I finally get it in there and I get it back in the crosshairs, and I take sight and I fire again. And this time there is a massive explosion. This bull moose rears up on both on hind legs, and he turns into the tree line and takes off. And there are trees. It's like a giant is going through the tree line. The trees are swaying, and I hear this moose bellowing in the tree line, and then everything goes silent. And I remember thinking to myself, well, great. Now you just winged it, and it's wounded, and you have to now track a wounded bull moose on your own in the wilderness, and you have this baby with you. What were you thinking? Why would you possibly think it was a good idea to shoot a moose all by yourself? Costco has plenty of meat. You could have just bought it. But instead, I told my son, it's like, okay, you got to stay here on your own. I don't want you tracking this moose with me. I have no idea what's in this tree line. So I hand my 6-year-old a .44 Magnum revolver. He knows what to do with it. He's shot plenty at this point. He's got gun safety. And I told him, you know, the only thing this is for is bears and moose. But you stay small and you stay hidden and you don't move until I come back and I tell you it's okay. So I cross the 40 yards across open swamp, and I get about 5 yards outside of the tree line. And I remember just thinking, I don't know what's in there. I don't know if there's this wounded moose waiting for me to come into the tree so that it can gore and trample me, or if my rifle report has signaled to every predator in a 4-mile radius that there's a wounded animal in here. So I don't, you know, I had a moment of hesitation on the tree line that I just was in way over my head. So finally I like get the courage to go into this tree line and track down this moose that I'm pretty sure I've wounded. And I'm hunting through the trees, and I go about 20-30 yards, and here in all of its glory is this massive bull moose laid up against the side of a tree. And I think to myself, well, that's so weird. I wonder who else shot a moose and lost it. And then it occurred to me, oh my God, that's my moose. I shot that moose. I killed that moose. I did it. I was successful. Ah! And so I'm like, you know, still pretty nervous. Still have a lot of adrenaline, and I'm kind of circling the moose, like trying to make sure that he's actually dead and he's not gonna like pop up and gore me. Surprise, yeah. And so like, I watch him for a few minutes, and like, he's definitely dead. I definitely successfully, all by myself, took my like small child out into the wilderness and harvested a moose. And so like, I'm elated and immensely proud and incredibly grateful that like, I get to go home and like, I fed my family. So I remember having the foresight that I needed to mark this spot with something. So I take off some piece of clothing. I think I had maybe like a jacket or something that I tied to a tree to mark my moose. So I go back and I get Canyon and I hunker down, and I'm like kind of dancing out of the swamps, rifle in one hand, like, yes, I am such a badass. And so I hear, we had an agreement, Bill and I, where there's no way to contact each other. So if somebody gets in trouble, you have to fire 3 shots. And if you hear 3 shots, that means you come running. Well, I'd only fired 2. And so we didn't have a signal, you know, we didn't have an agreement for what 2 shots meant. So I went ahead and I grabbed my 44 mag and I fired off a 3rd shot. And Bill is experienced enough to, he understood when that 2nd report from the rifle came that there was probably a good chance that I had shot at something. So about 15 minutes goes by, very hair-raising, intense 15 minutes. Every twig that I heard snap in the trees, I imagined was a giant grizzly bear coming to fight me for my moose. I was a little bit worked up. So Bill comes down the survey trail and he's got Desiree with him, and I finally feel like I could pop up and start celebrating, and I'm like, I did it, I got a moose all by myself. And so he's like, okay, well, let's go see it. So I grab Bill and I'm like, oh, it's just right over here. I even remembered to mark the spot. So we get to the tree line where my little jacket is hanging, and we walk straight in, and there's nothing. There's no moose anywhere. And I'm starting like, oh my gosh, no, it was right here. Like, I swear, there was a moose. I shot it. I made sure it was dead. It's here. He said, well, did you put a bullet in its head to make sure that it couldn't get up? And I was like, do they ever just get up and walk away? And he's like, it happens all the time. You have to make sure. So then I'm like, oh my gosh. So we spend another 5 minutes or so looking around, and it turns out that I just mismarked or misremembered in my like adrenaline-fueled anxiety. I kind of misremembered where my bull was, because we find him, he's laying exactly where I left him. He was, in fact, quite dead. That was a huge relief, Bill. I got some of my backwoods Alaska points back for that one. So then we start the process of field dressing this moose. And it occurs to Bill that now we have 3 adults, a 6-year-old, and 1,200 pounds of moose that we have to get back to roadside, and we have 1 jet ski. So what's the plan? So he thinks about it for a while, and he gets on the radio, and he's able to contact a neighbor of ours out at the lodge. He says, hey, you know, Dan, this is Wild Bill. I've got Rachel out here. We have a moose down. If you'll come out and help us dress this up, we'll give you some of the meat. And Dan's like, that's a great deal. Sounds good, buddy. So so Dan gets out there. We've got a Sawzall. We've got skinning knives. And I begin this process of, you know, Bill's a great teacher. He's not going to let you sit and watch how it's done. He wants you to get in there shoulder deep and clean and gut your own moose. So that was an incredible experience that I will forever vividly remember. So it took us, all said and done, about 12 hours to get the moose gutted and quartered, and then we put it in bags and we hang it for several days to age the meat. And so I shot my moose about 6:30 maybe at night, and it was about 7 o'clock the next morning we finally had it hung just back at the lodge. And then from there, everybody kind of took a nap, and then we had to get it loaded onto a boat, and then we had to get it out of the river. And yeah, it's an enormous amount of work to do that, but that was my first successful hunt, and I got some cool points because I didn't have a backup shot there with me. I was out there all by myself with a little guy, which, you know, could either be considered courageous or foolish, really, depending on the outcome. And I was very, very fortunate that it ended up going really well. I was incredibly grateful. We got about 650 pounds of meat off of that creature, and it fed us for almost 16 months.
Great story.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you for joining us in the Storyteller Studio with Tim Larson, where everything begins with a story.